Welcome back. This week on the podcast, I talk with Mayor Knox White. Mayor White has been the mayor of Greenville, South Carolina since December 1995. And underneath his leadership, Greenville has flourished. And it's kind of crazy to think about, but early on in his tenure, he said, as a quote, "I want to make Greenville to be the most beautiful, livable city in America." And looking at that now, it's hard to argue that he has not done that. In the past two decades, Greenville has earned national acclaim for its livability. It's on award-winning list for destinations. It's done incredible development for business of all certain types. And the nature and the beauty and the green spaces around Greenville are some of the things that I love most. One of the things that I loved from the conversation, it's near the end, we talk about keeping Greenville, Greenville. And he talked about how you have to develop green space now as a growing city. You have to invest in that type of stuff now before it gets too late. And I think that's exactly what they've done. And he credits a lot of what they've been able to do underneath his leadership to incredible partnerships and just incredible people of Greenville and planning and plans that were in place before he was there that they were able to carry out. But it was a great conversation. We were able to have the conversation in his office down at County Square overlooking Main Street. And it is, it's really hard to argue that Greenville hit the development under Greenville is could be the top in the country in the last 30 years or so. So it was a great conversation. Some incredible partners of mine are also here local in Greenville. I got to start with Spinks. Spinks has been around for over 50 years in the upstate of South Carolina. Now they've spread to the Southeast. They have locations all over the Southeast. And what I always say is I grew up knowing Spinks as a convenience store, a gas station. I would stop in and get my treats, get my gas when I got a little older. And I didn't know what they did for the communities that they're in. They invest and they give back millions and millions of dollars to incredible organizations like the March of Dimes and Spinks. I'm proud to have them as a sponsor. And all I can say is if you see Spinks, stop in, support your local Spinks, because I can guarantee you they're supporting the communities that they are in. Another incredible partner is Rebel Rabbit. For far too long, I think we've looked at alcohol as a drink that we have to have when we're socializing, we're out partying, we're at weddings, we're taking a break from work, we're getting home from in the evening from work, and you want to have an alcoholic drink. Well, Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to change that, a healthier way to socialize and relax, and it is alcohol-free. Their seltzers are alcohol-free. They are infused with cannabis, and it doesn't matter if you've never had cannabis before or you're a regular user of cannabis. They have two different levels. It's all legal in South Carolina, and you can relax. It's a great alternative to alcohol. It doesn't come with any of the negative side effects or the harmful side effects that alcohol does. So you'll be able to relax, have a drink in your hand, feel like you're socializing, like you might need a drink in your hand if you are one of those types of people. But it's great. You can relax. You'll get great night's sleep. You'll be able to wake up, be productive in the days following. And their link is in the show notes. You can get 20% off your orders. That link will take you directly to the discount, or you can look up their retailers. They have retailers all over the country now. They're really doing awesome and growing like crazy. And I couldn't be more proud of those guys. Then last but not least is Pelham Medical Center. In my thought, I think Pelham Medical Center could be one of the top hospitals in the country. They have some designations around their orthopedic procedures that are top in the Carolinas, the only one in the Carolinas. They have an incredible facility. They have a state-of-the-art cancer facility, hospital, general practice facilities, and they're just 10 minutes from downtown Greenville. So if you are in need or you're looking for a new provider, make sure to look at Pelham Medical Center. Or if you're anywhere in the country and you need a special service, look them up. I think it could be highly valuable to come see them, see a specialist. And like I said, they're just right in the upstate of South Carolina, and they're one of the top medical facilities in the country. So their link is in the show notes. You'll see all their offerings, all the facilities, state-of-the-art cancer facility, all that stuff. So if you need anything, Go to Pelham Medical Center. Learn more about them at the link in the show notes. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Mayor Knox White. Mayor Knox White, first off, thank you for having me in.
Glad to be here. You get a good view from the 10th floor of City Hall.
Yeah, you really do.
And it's the best view in town up here.
You reflect over Greenville, you really realize when you get up high how much it's grown and developed over the years. And you took the mayor's office in 95, but I'm interested to know a little bit before that. What were you doing? You're native of Greenville, graduated from Greenville High School, but what was life like as a kid in Greenville?
Yeah, I'm a native, which is kind of unusual these days. One thing that kind of attaches to what I do now is that when I was growing up in Greenville, almost all my summer jobs as a middle school student, in particular, were all downtown. So I was kind of a courier, I guess you'd call it that, running back and, go pick this up and deliver it over there. And so I have a granular block-by-block memory of downtown Greenville in the 1970s or so, when a lot of buildings were boarded up, but there were still department stores downtown, for example. And so whether I was conscious of it or not, I really developed great love for the city. But it really helps me now because I can walk around downtown and talk about current projects in downtown Greenville. And I remember each block, what it used to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good background to have.
But
I got involved in government and politics early in life. It was just kind of always my passion.
Well, what'd your parents do?
My dad was in textiles, like everybody at that era. And that's something good for people who are new to Greenville to understand that. And for decades, gosh, almost 100 years, everybody in Greenville was in textiles one way or the other. And my dad had a small textile company. But he came to Greenville through Donelson Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah.
After World War II, which is, again, another big part of Greenville's story because that was a Donelson Air Force Base during the war and then afterwards. Was a huge thing for Greenville. It brought hundreds and hundreds of people from all over the country to Greenville, and many of them did what my father did, which was met my mother, who was a Greenville native, and stayed here. So that influence on Greenville's population and business community was pretty profound.
Yeah, and Donelson is still there today.
That's right, SC Tech, as it's called now.
With you graduated from Greenville High School, just like myself, what's a fond memory or two of Greenville High back when you went? It won't get you in trouble now.
I went to Christ School, kindergarten through ninth grade, and so that's almost 10 years, with the classmates. Mm-hmm. It was a small classes, and everybody knew really well. And I decided after 10 years in the same school, here I was, entering 10th grade, I made a pretty big decision. I told my parents I was going to make a change. I was going to leave my friends at Christ School and go to public school, Greenville High School. They were horrified. Why would you do that? But I did, and I just had a sense that I wanted to be in a place that was bigger, different, more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all the above, by the way. A little bit scary and intimidating. But I went to Greenville High knowing virtually no one, but became student body president.
Nice.
3 years later, So it had a huge influence on me, just the people I met. You didn't have words like diversity back then, but that's what it was about. It was all kind of people, all walks of life, black and white, and from all different sides of town, and made friends across the board. And I learned a lot being, in terms of leadership, being on student council. And I learned a lot through that experience.
Yeah, and you mentioned you got into politics early on in life, and it maybe could have started at Greenville High School.
I worked in political campaigns. I was just always interested in government and current affairs. I was a big reader of Time Magazine, Life Magazine. My parents did take every magazine known to man, Wall Street Journal, and I read all that once in 7th and 8th grade. I was just a big reader on current events and what's happening, and I did keep up with the community. When I was in high school, I was very involved in things going on in Greenville. In fact, I was Mayor Max Heller had a youth committee, and I served on his youth committee. In fact, I was chairman. I was chairman of Max Heller's youth committee. That's something people don't realize. So I knew things about the city and cared about downtown way back then, and worked in getting, like I said, in political campaigns.
Yeah,
that served me well too.
Was there somebody in politics, or maybe doesn't even have to be in politics, that you looked up to as somebody like you strive towards?
Yeah, I worked. I mentioned Max. That's very, very important because he was very good to me. I mean, here I was a senior at Greenville High School. I was student body president and all, but he definitely paid extra attention to me, and I just enjoyed his friendship and kept it up all my life. So That was important. Another person whose campaign I worked in early on was Carol Campbell. And Carol went on to, I worked in his state when he ran for state house. I was a, 10th grader at Greenville High School. And he, and Carol Campbell lost that campaign for state house. But as people may know, he came back and won other races, including state senator, and then later congressman, and then later governor of South Carolina. We brought BMW to South Carolina. So, but working with Carol Campbell was obviously very important too.
Yeah.
I worked in his campaigns, and then I went, and when I left law school, when I graduated from law school, he had just been elected to Congress. So I had an open invitation to come to D.C. to serve as his legislative director. So I got to work in Washington for several years, which is a great experience, great learning experience. And that was because incredible timing. I mean, I knew Carol Campbell from back when he was not in elected office, and now he's congressman, and he was happy to invite me to work for him in Washington. I did not follow him to the governorship, however. He was on his own on that one, but I did work in his campaign for governor.
Very cool. With a lot of people I kind of interview and look up to, they always have somebody. They have great mentors in their life. And you mentioned BMW coming to Greenville. I remember that being like one of the biggest developments for the upstate of South Carolina in general. You get on the city council at Greenville in the mid-80s, and then you eventually somehow jump to wanting to be mayor. What was that? How did you process that? Was that a goal of yours when you got on city council? How did you start thinking about becoming the mayor of Greenville?
Yeah, it really wasn't the plan. I knew I wanted to be in government politics. Already was. I was playing a role anyway, working in D.C., working in campaigns and all. And that just gives you a sense of, you know the people up front, and up close, and you kind of think, well, I can do this, you know, and you have comfort level. It's just my passion in terms of my interest in community affairs and that kind of thing. But the mayor thing evolved differently. I was on city council when I first came back to Greenville after working in Washington. I came back to Greenville, got a job at the Haynesworth Law Firm. And early on, I was recruited by some of Carol Campbell's political people here in Greenville to run for a city council seat. I said no because I just moved back to Greenville. I just got married.
I was about to say, kids were on the way shortly, yeah.
Well, the kids a little ways off, but it was not an opportune time, but they talked me into it. You know, I thought I would come back and maybe get involved in maybe a state government or something. And after working in D.C., had the bug a little bit. But anyway, the city council was a little unusual, but it was an opportunity, and I said yes, and I did it, and I got elected to city council. And I learned through over time that I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the sense of accomplishment. You can touch, feel, and see what you accomplish on local level than what you never did when we were in Washington. And so I served on city council for 10 years and then took a break for a couple of years. And I saw an opportunity to run for mayor. Regrettably, I had to run against the incumbent mayor, who was a very fine person, Bill Workman. He'd already served three terms, been a very good mayor, I think, for Greenville at that time. I had a little more of a, it obviously resonated. I just had a sense that Greenville, this is back in 1995, that even then Greenville was beginning to show signs of some growth and things were changing. You mentioned BMW. And we weren't all textiles anymore. We were more diversified with GE and Michelin and everything else happening on the outside and BMW coming later. And I had a sense that, that people in Greenville, because I felt this way, wanted to keep Greenville with a city with a high quality of life. I mean, it just, you know, it wasn't all about cranking up the bulldozers. It was about neighborhoods and where you live, parks and sidewalks, and a really peculiar idea, which was, and by the way, we have a river, and wouldn't it be great to remove the Camperdown Bridge on the river, which most people thought was a crazy idea. But there was a core group, though, the Carolina Foothills Garden Club and others, who thought it was a good idea, and I thought it was a good idea. So all of these are kind of the quality of life agenda, if you will. And that's what I ran on as mayor. And it resonated. I mean, nobody was more surprised than I was that a lot of other people felt like I did, that that's kind of where Greenville now needed to focus its attention on.
Talk to me.
And quality of life.
Yeah, neighborhoods. And I think you mentioned, too, like the livability of Greenville, which has now, I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but it's, you know, we're on the top list in the world almost for livable cities. What was Main Street like when you took over in 95?
Well, that's a good question because it's interesting. Main Street Greenville, when I 95, 96, my first real year was 96. It certainly had a lot of attention given to it. Earlier, my predecessors had you know, Main Street had changed from four lanes to two.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful trees have been planted. We had the Peace Center, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And you had some of these things in place. But the truth is, we were not on any top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was coming to see Greenville. Everybody felt that Main Street looked good, but it wasn't at that point. And most importantly, under those beautiful trees were vacant buildings still, by and large, vacant buildings.
Yeah.
We had the early adopters, thank goodness, of the restaurant scene with Carl Sobosinski and others beginning to build what they did. But we didn't have vibrancy on the street like we know it today. And I also would discern that we certainly didn't have anybody living downtown,
mm-hmm.
Main Street or otherwise, just hardly anyone. So that was our task, to create vibrancy on Main Street after 5 o'clock, after the office workers leave. And that became, for 10 years, the core, certainly my core focus,
mm-hmm.
getting residential downtown, supporting the restaurant scene that's emerging, but getting that residential scene moving. At that time, the Peace Center, just talk about the Peace Center a second, it was so fantastic, but it was kind of hermetically sealed. I mean, you went to the Peace Center,
mm-hmm.
parked your car, went inside, and you left.
Yeah.
It was kind of by itself down on the far end of Main Street. And also, the way it was designed, it did not interface with the river really much at all. It looked away from the river because the river didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It simply did not exist. I mean, people's consciousness and the waterfall, of course, was covered over by a four-lane highway bridge. So that's kind of the picture of downtown Greenville. We had a little bit of life across from the Hyatt. In fact, my first couple of years as mayor, this is something I look back and kind of laugh about. You wouldn't believe the focus we had on one block of Main Street. One block across from the Hyatt, shops and stores were beginning to happen, and there was a lot of drama. There was always a lot of drama. And I could look back and go, well, it's been about 5 or 6 years where all the drama and attention was one block of Main. Couldn't conceive that there'd be anything happening on the river. West End Greenville was boarded up.
Mm-hmm. I remember early on in my life, we wouldn't go towards the Camperdown Bridge. And a lot of times I remember the beautiful Poinsett Hotel had, bricks through the windows.
It was boarded up,
Talk to me about the redevelopment of the Poinsett Hotel and how that played a role.
Yeah, it played a really important role because I just described a minute ago how you had a little bit of heartbeat of life around the Hyatt, and you did. It was a good model, but we had to get residential downtown, so we started working on things like the Bookends Project. That's the garage, Spring Street Garage.
Mm-hmm.
We put in residential in that garage. We promoted residential development every time we could. All that was beginning to happen, but as you came down the street, literally the development stopped at Hyatt or then later stopped on Coffee Street, and that was it. And the Poinsett was really important because it dragged, if you will, or jolted down development down two more blocks of Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the hotel had been boarded up for 25 years. You can see from my office, I'm looking right at the Poinsett Hotel from the office here, and I can remember when there were, boarded up windows and chain link fence around mm-hmm. it. So that's the look of it. But getting the hotel back online was extremely important. Living in a lot of false starts, it came dangerously close to being bulldozed, very close to being bulldozed. And to finding the right developer, a Charleston developer who had done this kind of thing before,
mm-hmm.
he owned the Francis Marion Hotel, still does.
Yeah, I love that hotel.
Which is a twin hotel. There's the same architect, built about the same time in the 1920s. And so finding Steve Dopp of Charleston to redevelop that hotel was a huge thing. We really made sure Steve had all the tools he needed to do it. And that did cause a massive readjustment of development that people began to buy property on this end of Main Street,
mm-hmm.
around City Hall, around the Peace Center, in a way that never had done before. So that was extremely important. In one sense, you might say maybe we wouldn't have been able to go to the river had we not first seen the redevelopment of the Poinsett Hotel.
Yeah.
But I love that hotel.
I love it.
I had my memories as a kid, again, going in that hotel, and that was just like an obsession. Like, how can we get this hotel back in?
It's still one of my favorites. Whenever
it's beautiful.
Anybody comes to town, I have family members. I have, my parent, my wife's aunt, uncles come to town. Like, you got to stay at the Poinsett Hotel. It's like my favorite historic site in Greenville. And you mentioned the Peace Center being this far, the last part of Main Street for a while.
Kind of an island to itself at that time.
And now I look at it as almost the middle of
the middle street. Yeah. And it's a whole campus, too, with their new development they're doing there now. It's just great leadership at the Peace Center. Then they renovated the hotel during the recession of 08, which mm-hmm. was amazing, raising private money, but Hayne Hipp made that happen. And that part of that renovation back in 09, 10, 11, that period, they very symbolically, the They expanded the ball, the uh, the public space and took what was a driveway. There was a driveway in front of the Peace Center. Just a driveway. Because you drove up, got out, and got out of there. Okay, well, now the new downtown, with the poinsett open and things beginning to happen on Main Street, they could reimagine the Peace Center with making it a beautiful courtyard out front. You got the cars out of there. Began to embrace the river, because now we're serious about looking at the river. So the Peace Center itself reflects the changes that happened in downtown.
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit Seltzers.
Talk to me about the early ideas and conversations around Liberty Bridge and Falls Park.
Well, the Carolina Foothills Garden Club, back in the early early 60s and in 1970, embraced the area under the Camperdown Bridge and brought in architects, designers, and began to work in that area and create a garden down to the falls. But they'd be the first to acknowledge, and Harriet Weitch was president of the Garden Club. She called the four-lane highway the concrete monster. And she talked about an oasis down there under the fall, at the waterfall, and how it could be an oasis in the heart of the city for Greenville. But this was, you know, most people didn't pay attention to that. I mean, most people didn't even know, as you know, a lot of people didn't know. Most people didn't know we had a waterfall.
I didn't even think about it before.
I know people weren't aware of it, conscious of it. Channel 4, about 8 or 9 years before we took down the bridge, Channel 4 did a man on the street interview kind of thing on Main Street. What do you think about Greenville's waterfall? And no one they interviewed at, like, say, 12 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon knew what they were talking about. Dang. And then they went down and filmed the waterfall under the bridge. That's how it was. And so it was a hard, long, thrown out fight to get it down. But Harriet Weitch and the Garden Club were just incredible and went to every meeting, and we built a growing consensus that this should be done. And we had some new people elected to city council too, but it was a hard sell, because basically we were saying we're going to spend $18 million to build a beautiful park around a waterfall that you've never seen, trust us. And that's kind of the way it was. And people didn't really understand it until it opened in 2004.
Do you remember when people started to realize how great that was going to be? Like the feeling you got and the people around that had been working on it for so long?
Yeah, the great designer, we had Andrea Maines from Boston Garden Club, hired her to do the design you see today. But also we had a local landscape architect, Tom Keith, wonderful guy who worked with the Garden Club, worked with the city. And he was really hands-on during the construction, making lots and lots of changes and details of, you know, where the staircases go. He was really into it. And Tom worked for 2 years literally in the park behind the fences while the construction's going on. The old bridge was being torn apart and taken out of there. And he used to say exactly what you just said. One day I went down there and he said, you know, I'm so close to this. This is when the park was about, let's say, 90% complete, but it hadn't been opened yet to the public. Mm-hmm. But you could begin to see it. And he looked at me one day and he said, tell me the truth. I'm so close to this. Do you think people will come to see this? And I remember thinking, God, it is great, Tom. You're right. Hope so.
I think so.
But to answer your question, no, it would still take probably 2 years before we started having a sense that people from outside of Greenville came to see Falls Park.
Like tourists.
It wasn't immediately apparent.
Because we get a lot of tourists now.
Oh, goodness. I can still remember when this is true story. I can actually remember the first time I ever saw someone downtown who I identified as a tourist. I saw a man with a camera that tells you how far back it is, not an iPhone, a camera, taking a picture of the Joel Poinsett statue that we had placed in front of the hotel when we renovated the Poinsett Hotel. And I saw him taking pictures, and I was conscious of it. I was, wow, somebody, he's a tourist. He's taking pictures.
Yeah.
Another little factoid. There was a period of time, again, during this in-between period, I mean, Falls Park was open, but only been open for a year or so. You could not get a postcard of downtown Greenville or Greenville anywhere in these stores downtown.
Dang.
They had some, you know, stock photos that had been taken, I mean, one of the Daniel built. And nobody wanted it. Nobody saw it. Greenville was not a place you came to visit. People who lived here didn't see a reason to take a picture of anything.
And, I mean, I think people, even me growing up here and seeing the bridge, that bridge is so unique in a way.
Yeah.
Like, it's a special bridge. I know it's, you know, one of just a couple in the world or something like
Andrew
that.
Well, Andrew had the concept of a pedestrian suspension bridge over the waterfall, and it almost didn't happen. It almost didn't happen. It had its critics. People immediately thought you're wasting money. It's one thing to take down a bridge. Why would you put up another bridge?
Mm-hmm.
And say, well, it's not a four-lane highway bridge. It's something different. But, oh, no, no. There were a lot of people. I still have the emails and letters from people just thinking that's the craziest thing, waste of money. Andrea, the architect, I remember her role in this. She was very adamant that we had to have a pedestrian bridge there for really a couple reasons. One is, as she always pointed out, the waterfall is kind of down below the street level, so you need something so people can fully see the waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't have the effect seeing it from the edges. And secondly, just connect the concept of connectivity, connecting one side of the river to the other.
Yeah.
So she was adamant to the design team, about a 10-person design team I served on, as the decisions were made that there needed to be a pedestrian bridge. But the other thing, when we went out to find an architect designer for the bridge, we found there were just not any, we couldn't think of getting who would design and build a pedestrian bridge. It just didn't happen. And we were so fortunate to get Miguel Rosales, native of Guatemala, went to MIT, was in Boston. He was just starting his career, and he saw the ad. This is, again, pre-internet, saw the ad in the paper, basically, we're looking for a suspension bridge, and he'd always wanted to do one. So he came to the interview process, and he nailed it because he's the only person we interviewed who focused on the waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else came and focused on, hey, I'll design you a bridge. It will look like this, and I'll be famous, you know, because I'm designing the bridge in your town. But Miguel was the only one. He's a very modest person, very talented, intelligent. But he came and he said, I've been to a lot of cities in the United States. I've never seen a city with a waterfall right off of Main Street.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's one of a kind. And whatever bridge I design, the waterfall will remain the star of the show, and I will propose it be bowed away from the waterfall and that it complement the falls. And he left the room, and every one of us on the committee said, he's our guy.
Nice.
He's our guy. He totally gets it in a way the others did not.
With that, and I don't know what the process was, but it connects into the Swamp Rabbit Trail, which in a lot of ways, I think now the Swamp Rabbit Trail is one of the coolest things about Greenville. And it brings a lot of people to Greenville. And Greenville's a huge, active town. What was the process for the Swamp Rabbit Trail?
Ooh, it's connected, and yet it's different. The county had bought this rail line many, many years before, just abandoned rail line. So that's good. That took some foresight. They just didn't know what to do with it for the next 10-plus years. From a city standpoint, we knew, going back with the leadership of Paul Ellis and so many others, we knew that a system of bike and walking trails was something Greenville would want to see. Already mm-hmm. had a system in Cleveland Park that was, you know, kind of small compared to what we're used to now, but there it was, and people did like it. So when we built Falls Park, and then later River Place comes along,
mm-hmm.
the public spaces in front of along the river, we built into it this elaborate system of bike and walking trails with the idea that we would one day hope to see this continued up the river. We used to talk about up the river all the time
mm-hmm.
through what is now Unity Park, because that's where the city limits would end. And so not long after Falls Park, the city extended the trail up through what is now Unity Park, but then it was an abandoned area mm-hmm. with, you know, blighted buildings and everything else. And then it stopped. It just stopped. And but we were out there talking about that, and then the county did begin to see this vision. Came at it in their own way, and we joined forces, and that's what we've been ever since. It's a great public-private partnership, and it's a great partnership between the county, which built most of it, and the city of Greenville.
With that, you mentioned Unity Park, which is one of the newer developments in Greenville. There's still a ton going on there. With what you've done, what the city has done in its past, has it become easier to build on to the trail, build on to the nature.
Right. I look back and I always think about this. Everything was so mm-hmm. hard in the beginning. You had to try to promote a vision and just really take the consultants' reports we had, people telling us, here's what you need to do. Well, not letting them sit on the shelf, but go ahead and do it. So Falls Park was very hard, long drawn out controversy over taking down the bridge. It got baseball downtown was a bloodbath. It took forever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people opposed
it. Floor field, yeah.
But success bred success. I mean, people saw it. I mean, the points of the tail being successful was a big buy-in. It gave us a chip, if you will, that, you know, maybe the city knows what it's doing, that you can bring back points of the tail. Maybe the city knows what it's doing for Falls Park. I mean, we got a little credit each time. And so in as long as Unity Park was a 10-year saga in more modern times, but in the scheme of things, it was easier than any other project
mm-hmm.
because we had some credibility. But Unity Park, getting back to Tom Keith, it was Tom Keith, designer of Falls Park, who came to see me not long after it opened and had the 1907 Greenville plan, which you may have heard about. 1907, you are right, Greenville plan.
I have not heard of it.
It's right on my desk right now. It's sitting over there. Has pictures and everything, and they proposed in 1907, a group from Boston proposed three parks for the city of Greenville. One became Cleveland Park. Cleveland Park is mm-hmm. right out of that 1907 plan. And then they proposed Falls Park, so it took 100 years for the city to do that. And the third park is the area that's now called Unity Park. And it was, of course, where us once had a segregated park system, a black park and a white park. And that's why the name today is Unity Park.
Very cool. I didn't know that.
It tells the story in a very upfront way. But it was Tom Keith that came to see me and said, after Falls Park opened and it seemed to be successful, he said, now we got to do the next park. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he put down the 1907 plan, which was beginning to get more attention through some other studies. And
mm-hmm.
Clemson plan a few years after that would promote the same idea, which was there is a plan, you know, to have a park upriver. But it's, again, if people didn't know where the waterfall is, they certainly did not know, most people, unless you lived in the neighborhood, you did not know where Mayberry Street, all the area.
Definitely
there is. It's that area was no reason to be there unless you lived in the neighborhood. And so blighted, vacant buildings, the old public works department, which was miserable, trucks and vehicles and gasoline right next to the river, junk vehicles scattered all over what is now beautiful green spaces. Wrecked police cars, landfill. It used to be a jail down there. I mean, that whole area has just been a throwaway zone. So when mm-hmm. we first started talking about it, we knew we had to do it differently from Falls Park. This had to be done completely differently in the sense that we had a neighborhood vision to latch on to. So working with the southern side and West Greenville neighborhoods, we from day one, the plan was allowed to evolve and develop with mm-hmm. the neighborhood input being the most important thing. So everything in that park is what the neighborhood wanted to see.
Yeah, and I absolutely love that. I'm down there almost every day. I do my yoga at Soul Yoga right down there across from the Commons.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis, and you might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best, and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIVE15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep, and they'll hook you up. Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE15 to get 15% off your order.
With nature being a part of Greenville, how big of that is part of the growth?
I think it's a big part of it because I the way I see it is we're growing because we're on Interstate 85. We have major industries here, Lockheed, BMW, Michelin, so many others.
And they're all growing.
The population, people are coming to Greenville from all the country, just as they're coming to Charlotte, just as they're coming to Raleigh. I mean, we're on that same track. And how do you manage the growth? And one of the things, one of the most important things you can do, I think, is to work very hard now when you still have a chance to build green space and parks, mm-hmm. trails, and other things that promote quality of life.
I love that.
That's the best advice and it's not original with me. When we go around other cities in the country, like Austin, Texas, and you ask them, what do you wish you had done? That's the first thing that comes up.
I have a quote from you early on as when you were mayor. It says, I want Greenville to be the most beautiful, livable city in America. you've just won your eighth term as our mayor. I've heard you're not going to run for re-election in 27. You start thinking about your legacy as Greenville's mayor. And that quote from how many ever years ago rings true today. Is that when you said it? I mean, I'm sure it was a dream and you wanted to make it happen. But now you look back at your tenure. What do you think about that and the growth that Greenville has had underneath you?
Yeah, I think it's important, going back to what I learned from other people I worked with and worked for, that if you're going to be in public office, you would be in government, be public service, you know, you've got to have a goal and a vision. You know, why are you doing it? What is your purpose? Otherwise, why would you do it? Certainly doesn't pay anything. So earlier on, when I started talking about that was my vision. I mean, make Greenville the most beautiful and livable city in America. And I can remember when the eyeballs used to roll. I mean, that was like a ridiculous statement, and people didn't have an idea what I was talking about. And I don't think anybody's eyeballs roll anymore. I think we're all proud that we have such a beautiful community and green space. I think we're also proud that we have a community that where people work together well. We still have a good collaborative spirit that predates me being as mayor. Greenville's always had that, and let's hope we keep it. But people work together well here, public-private partnerships. People feel like they are included. This is a great city of opportunity for people to come to. And we all have that in common. We love the green space, the parks, and the beauty of the city. And that does set us apart. Mm-hmm. And people who come here from other cities that are growing cities, they envy what we have here.
Yeah.
But I'm very proud of it. And I think I'm particularly proud that people who live in Greenville love Greenville,
yeah,
and like what we're doing, so it makes my job a lot easier. And let's do trails. Let's extend the Spawn Wave Trail. Yes, everybody says, well, let's do that, so that we don't have to sit around and argue about it. We do it, and people want it. And so I give a lot of credit to the people who live here who have this sensibility about this place.
And it's, I mean, as a Greenville native, I'm proud to call Greenville my home. And kind of as we finish up here, my last question would be, and you might just kind of restate some things you just said, but how do we keep Greenville? But also continue to grow.
Well, I do hope we continue to have a spirit of doing something different from the rest of the country, where people actually do work together. We try to work in a nonpartisan way. We try to find where we agree. I mean, Unity Park is a powerful symbol. Some people could roll their eyes about that, but hey, go down to Unity Park on the weekends and see it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The diversity that's there, people just gathering there of all kind of people. It's wonderful, and not every city can have that. We had a group from Minneapolis here about a year or two, and I'm going to tell you something. They got tears in their eyes when they walked around Unity Park.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they wanted to show me, that they had nothing like this in Minneapolis, and it really got to them here in Greenville. They saw something. So we continue to have that and then continue to put the emphasis on quality of life. The economic development sort of follows that, and we promote quality of life first and foremost.
Well, Mayor Knox White, thank you for coming on.
Glad to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.